Now I know all these things, but at the time it was just like, oh, like this is fine. This is like what I'm supposed to be doing, even though like from a very objective place, know that that was like the opposite of health. And I think that just goes also with like our society's really fucked up like view of health and definition of health. And like, because clearly like for anyone at any body size, like those behaviors are not healthy.
Hello, I'm Nia Patterson, and welcome to episode 7 of Body Trauma. Today we are going to be talking with Colleen Warner. She is a ballet dancer, writer, therapist in training, and influencer who speaks largely about mental illness and ballet. But before we get started, I want to put a warning that this conversation is not censored and can include potentially triggering material. We also don't censor for cursing, but we will bleep out any numbers regarding weight or exercise activity. If at any time you feel yourself triggered or profoundly upset, please stop listening and take care of you and your mental health. That's honestly what's most important. If you're new here, we listen to people tell the story of their bodies. This might include discrimination based on race, gender, size, sexuality, etc., and also the different traumas people have experienced in their body, including mental and physical health, eating disorders, body image, sexual assault, gender dysphoria, and more. I'm really excited to go speak with Colleen, so here we go. So I'm here with Colleen Warner, and she's going to tell us a little bit about herself and what she does, and yeah.
Awesome. Well, I am very excited to be here today. Like Nia said, I'm Colleen Warner. I am 23 years old and I live in Nashville, Tennessee, but I grew up in New York, right outside of New York City on Long Island. I'm currently in grad school getting my master's in clinical mental health counseling to become a therapist. I want to specialize in eating disorders and trauma. I've been in my program for about a year now, and this fall I will start my internship. So I'll actually start seeing clients, both as far as individuals and groups, which is very exciting. I'm also a dancer. I've been a dancer all my life. I took a bit of time away from dance when I was recovering from anorexia, but about a year ago, really became serious about my dance training again. And so, one of my biggest goals is to create an eating disorder treatment program for dancers. So that will kind of combine my passion for mental health and therapy with my love for dance, because it's a population that like really needs to be treated very specifically, similarly to people with eating disorders and trauma. So yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So I guess let's just get started. So tell me, what has life been like in your body?
I have definitely had a very complicated, very complex relationship with my body for most of my life. The first time I can remember struggling with body image was when I was 8 years old and I was at my annual physical, and my pediatrician told me that I needed to eat more salads, which was something that was obviously very inappropriate to say to a child, but honestly inappropriate to say to anyone. And it was also something that was like very confusing for me, because as a kid, I was never a picky eater. I ate a lot of things. My parents didn't have any like real issues or concerns around my eating patterns. And I actually liked vegetables a lot. I just didn't like salads and didn't eat a lot of salads because I didn't enjoy them. And it was just very strange for my doctor to say that to me. And so that was kind of when I started thinking, there must be something wrong with me if this doctor is saying this. And I've been taught that doctors are smart people and doctors are telling me what I need to do for my health. And that was also, given I didn't know this at the time, but learned as an adult, that that was one of the first times that my mom started thinking that there was something wrong with my body, that she didn't have any concerns before then. But then once she heard my doctor say that, she was concerned, you know, about potentially developing different health conditions or whatever. So that was when she started, you know, thinking herself that there could be something wrong with my body or my eating patterns or my size or my weight or whatever. And so that interaction kind of started to color my relationship with my body. And I first dieted when I was 10. I had found a Weight Watchers book in my living room and decided that was something I wanted to try. I was very independent as a kid. I'm the youngest in my family, and I learned how to read when I was 3, and I was just very independent. My parents kind of like let me run with that independence because they thought that they could trust that. And so like they weren't, you know, kind of like helicoptering, and they were letting me have
definitely
a lot of autonomy with different things, which in some respects was really good. And I think has, you know, shaped me to be a very independent person. And at the same time, you know, they weren't necessarily paying attention to things like that as much, as far as like even knowing that like I would pick up a book like that, or like they weren't necessarily thinking that like me dieting would be bad. And like that's also like a product of like them growing up in diet culture as well, especially my mom, you know, as women, while like people of all genders obviously are subject to you know, diet culture and all these influences, I feel like especially for women that it is just amplified. And I think also like age-wise, like, you know, when my parents were growing up, the things that they heard from their parents and things in magazines. And I feel like while like now things have started to shift as far as things being like in media, as far as body positivity and anti-diet culture and things like that, that was 100% not a thing when I was growing up. And my mom was constantly on diets and trying new things and restricting things. And so for her, it didn't seem strange that I was doing that.
Right.
And it's kind of, I guess, in a way, like a bonding thing when I was dieting at different points.
Oh,
like we
yes.
were dieting together
yes.
and things like that. And it was like, and honestly, like now, like, yes, that definitely contributed a lot to my relationship with my body. And also I can't blame her for like, you know, what she grew up in. And it wasn't that it was malicious on her part or anything like that. It was just what she was taught as well. And she didn't have that education around it. And so it wasn't, you know, you can't blame someone for not having that education and not realizing what was going on there. And so it's definitely something, and we've talked about, me and my mom have talked a lot about that now, because she also, like, as I've gone through my own recovery and have become passionate about health at every size and, you know, dismantling diet culture, a lot of that I have taught her. And so while she doesn't totally buy into all of it, she buys into a lot of it, and especially with intuitive eating and things like that. And so we have had discussions around, you know, things that like that doctor's appointment that I had mentioned, or like us dieting together and things like that. And so that was something, like, I'm sure for many people growing up, that was very common and just kind of like not something that anyone thought of as, you know, bad or a problem, even though it definitely contributed to my eating disorder and the development of it. And so that, like, on and off dieting continued for like a few years. And I would say probably around when I was like somewhere between like 14, 15 was when that started becoming a more consistent pattern. I would say started, you know, being like actually disordered. It wasn't just like occasional dieting. Like, obviously, like, all dieting is unhealthy and all dieting is disordered, but I think when
right.
it's actually, like, I guess called disordered eating or whatever, I think there's like kind of like a very fine line there, because obviously
was not- there something that like happened at that point that triggered that, or
I don't think necessarily consciously as much at that point, but like now that I've done work, and I think also like now that I know more about like how trauma works and things like that. So I first experienced trauma when I was 14. I was sexually abused. And so that was something that at the time I like pushed away and didn't label it as abuse, didn't label it as trauma. And at the same time, even though I did that, my brain obviously was still doing something with that information.
Yes.
And so that was a big thing. And then also, you know, I was very early in high school at that point, and I also was getting more serious about dance. And so I guess it was kind of that combination of things. And, you know, being in high school too, I feel like then it wasn't just, you know, my mom that I was having influences from. It was like the people around me and what girls were eating at lunch or weren't eating at lunch and things like that.
Yes.
Was a big, big thing. And then, you know, like I said, as far as getting more serious about dance, because I started dancing when I was 3, but didn't get serious at all until I was like 12, 13. I went to a very, very recreational school when I was young and went like once or twice a week, and it was a very, very low pressure environment. But then I realized that I wanted to get more serious about it. But once I changed studios and was in a more serious environment, I realized how my body didn't look like the bodies of people around me. And it was definitely something that, like, I would say like the first few months that I was there, I didn't really notice it as much. But I think I started to notice that more. And it was something like, especially like if I would go see performances and things like that of professional companies, I like started to realize, oh, like there aren't people who look like me. And, you know, so that was like a very strange thing. And I also then started feeling like, oh, like maybe if I change my body, then I'll get more attention as a dancer, or my technique will improve or whatever. So that was...
So- Were you going through like puberty at the same time then? Because I feel like that's like right around when people go through puberty.
Definitely. And for me, like I gained a pretty significant amount of weight in puberty. And like obviously like everybody, their bodies are very different. Like what an individual, you know, like everybody around me was going through different things with puberty. And like some yes. people gain more, some people gain less. And like for me, like that was, it was a very big shift. And so, like, my body, like, I guess, like, I don't know if evening out is the word I want to use, but, like, you know, like, when you're a kid and when you're in puberty, all of a sudden, like, everything changes, and, like, obviously, like, there's the time that your body needs to, like, shift and, like, things redistribute and, like, mm-hmm. you get taller and things like that, and that was something that was, like, it was, like, a very sudden change, I guess, from, like, what my body looked like when I was younger. And, you know, even with like fitting in dancewear, I mean, in dancewear runs very small compared to normal clothing.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway. And so like, it's the same thing with any exercise clothing too, that like everything, it runs very different. And also the fact that like, it's tight. I mean, and that's for a reason, you know, that instructors need to see your body and things like that. And it's also like, you know, I think it made me more hyper aware of it, because when I was just like in my regular day-to-day clothes and I was in school or whatever, like, yeah, maybe some things would be more form-fitting than others, but nothing was as like form-fitting as wearing like a leotard and tights and being in like looking in the mirror. Like I also, like, I remember that particular, like the year that I first got serious, we didn't have to wear like a specific leotard style, but we had a specific color, like that my color for my level that year was light blue, and so that was even more so than like if I was wearing like a black leotard or something, because like there was no hiding anything, like you saw like everything. And I like could tell also, like I was comparing myself to like how the girls like who were dancing with me, like what they looked like. And it was also difficult because since I got serious later than a lot of people, and like even though I had been dancing all my life, it wasn't like the training I was getting was like honestly like almost like nothing when I first started. And so I was more or less like restarting at that point. And so I was dancing with girls who were a bit younger than me, because that's where my level was. And so there was that, you know, obviously like most of them weren't like even going through puberty
right.
yet. And so like they were still, you know, their bodies are still different like now as adults, but it was to a much different extent because they, you know, were still very much in child's bodies, and my body was becoming more of an adult body. And so it was very difficult for me to see that when there were like very few people who, if any, who had similar bodies to mine. And so, and also like not having like adult role models who had similar bodies as far as like professional dancers and things like that. And like when I was looking at dance magazines and
that's very
all
true.
Of that, yeah. And so I started like consciously trying to change my body. And as I did that, I did get more attention and I got more featured roles, and it became something that I felt it needed to be like a consistent thing. And also like, it was one of those things where it was like never enough, you know, it wasn't like in my head, it, like honestly, like most of the time there wasn't like, okay, this number will be, you know, the number that it needs to be. Like there, I feel like most of the time there wasn't like an ideal like goal weight or goal size. It was kind of just like needs to be as small as possible. And so it was just something where I was like very compulsively weighing myself and, you know, measuring my food and tracking my food and tracking my exercise. And like, it was just something like, and like looking back on it now, I find it like very strange. Like, again, I don't blame my parents at all because they also had their own things that they were going through and also like had my siblings. And like, my parents also divorced when I was 16. And so like, they had like all their own shit that they were dealing with.
Yes.
Between work and like my mom was going back to school at that point. And so like, it was, you know, my growing up and my dieting and whatever wasn't the only thing that they had on their plate. So kind of as an adult, it makes sense now that they didn't necessarily see that as a thing. And it's also at the same time, like that dialectic of like, wow, like how did no one think like this was a problem? And again, I think part of that is because I was in a larger body when I started out. And so like, there was that piece of like, you know, like if I feel like if I was in a smaller body when I started out with that, like it might have been like noticed and like called out as a bad thing more so than like
definitely
since I was starting out in a larger body and also being in the dance world, because there is a very much a dichotomy of, I guess, like what's considered healthy as a quote unquote normal person and what's considered healthy as a dancer. And so that, you know, I think what was considered like, I guess, like a healthy level of thinness, whatever the fuck that means, like as a dancer was much different than like if I was just like a regular person who wasn't dancing. So I think like things were allowed to get to a certain point, because honestly, even when I was, you know, like at my smallest, I still like in the dance world, it wasn't like even like, I guess enough, even though like for, again, like if I was just like not a dancer, what the body size that I had would have been more concerning, because I was in the dance world. It's like, oh, this is normal. And like, there are definitely people who naturally are very small and like are healthy there, and they're not restricting themselves to get to that point. And at the same time, that's like kind of few and far between, that the majority of people don't naturally have that body type or that body size.
Definitely.
And for me, that certainly wasn't, you know, where my body needed to be naturally, which I've learned now through recovery. And I just assumed that like that was where I was naturally supposed to be, and that's where my body needed to be, even though that was 100% not the truth. And so that was something that it just like became like a consistent thing in my life, that it was, you know, constant, like this constant restriction and overexercise. And it just kind of, you know, for my high school years was, you know, a very consistent piece. And for myself, like I said, that there was kind of like never a point of enough, that it was just something that I needed to constantly do. And there wasn't, you know, like occasionally there would be like cheat days or whatever, but that was also few and far between, because I got to a point, because I had a lot of orthorexic tendencies too, that like I was very obsessed with clean eating. And like, there was like, honestly, like it was kind of like, there weren't a lot. And like, honestly, anything that was like a cheat or whatever was definitely, was like, honestly, still like a diet version of whatever it was. Or like, I ate a lot of like the Weight Watchers foods and like skinny whatever, and Halo Top was a huge thing for me, which like now I'm just like.
So like, how old were you? Like about how old were you at this point?
I was like 16 to 18.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, when I was 16, I changed dance studios again and got even more serious, especially about ballet. And that was also at that point where I was like being like, okay, I want to actually be a professional dancer. I want to go to college for dance. And so, and I was, you know, auditioning for like summer intensives for ballet schools and things like that. And it was, again, this thing where I was like, okay, like if I want to be like marketable, if I want to be employable as a dancer, it needs to be this. And again, continued because, you know, I kind of had, I guess, these different phases of body change throughout all of this. And once I like got close to that, like, stereotypical ballerina body, which is all bullshit, but it was like I did get close to whatever that was, that I did continue again, you know, to get more roles, and that people were like asking me how I was doing this and saying, you look so great, you look so healthy. Like,
so you were getting a lot of like positive reinforcement that what you were doing was great.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't anything negative being said about it. It was all positive. It was all like
there was never like any time that someone was like, hey, maybe there's something wrong here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one ever said anything wrong about it. And it was definitely like something, because it was so reinforced, that I was like, I had no idea that there was anything wrong with it, even though I was constantly tired and lightheaded. And like, you know, now I know all these things, but at the time it was just like, oh, like, this is fine. This is like what I'm supposed to be doing, even though like from a very objective place, know that that was like the opposite of health. And I think that just goes also with like our society's really fucked up like view of health and definition of health. And like, because clearly like for anyone at any body size, like those behaviors are not healthy. You know,
I know that like eating disorders take like a physical toll on the body. Like, do you have any sort of like lasting physical health effects from your eating disorder?
So I'd say definitely it's starting, I think, to get a bit better, but my hair was definitely a big one. When I was a kid, I had super, super thick hair, and my hair thinned out a lot in my eating disorder. I never like lost hair, but my hair thinned out a lot. So that's been like one. And like, even like now, like I'm almost 4 years in recovery, and like, it's still like, I think it's slowly starting to get a bit better, but it's definitely like nowhere near where it was. And I also don't know if that's something that will ever like get back to where it was, so that's a frustrating one. Otherwise, I luckily don't, I mean, and also I guess I don't totally know, because it's not like I've ever had like a bone density scan or anything like that, so I don't know for sure, because I'm sure that there are a lot of other things that are like, you know, kind of unknowns that could be going on there. Luckily, like as far as I know, I don't have any like major lasting effects. I would say like hair is a big one, and I guess also just like so much shift. I feel like also like once I was in recovery, especially like, because when I first started you know, like when I first started recovery, it was kind of like, it's a very slow process. And even then was like, even though like I was starting to like be anti-diet culture and was starting to get introduced to health at every size and things like that, it was still kind of like quasi recovery. And like, my body had some shifts as far as like getting back to a healthier place. But it didn't really like drastically shift at first. Mm-hmm. But then like, I would say like 2 to 2.5 years into my recovery, my body shifted a lot, like changed several sizes over a span of like a few months. I went from chest size, I had always been like A, borderline B, and I am now a G, which was like, it was like, and it was just like over, like it was like, because also like in my family, like my mom isn't large chested, and like that is like her natural thing, and like that was always like what it was. But I guess like for, and like that was my natural thing for a while for me, like all growing up. But then I guess like it was almost kind of like I hit a second puberty, and like all of a sudden it was like I didn't know what the fuck to do with it. And it was like also with buying clothing and things, that it was like stuff would work for like a month or two, and then suddenly like, especially with bras and stuff, and bras are not cheap.
No,
especially once you get into large sizes.
Yes.
And like I was just like, I don't know what the fuck to do with these. Like it was just like, and like there were parts of it that I was like, okay, this is cool, I've wanted to have larger boobs all my life. But then all of a sudden I was like really just like, can we just like get to somewhere that's consistent? Because like, and it's the same thing now, like luckily my body has been pretty consistent, I would say, for like the past year or so. Things have shifted, you know, a little bit over time, and like that's just kind of like, obviously like our bodies are constantly changing, but
right,
I feel like
definitely
I'm at least at a pretty stable place. And that's kind of like now, even when I have like this detached thing where like the actual size isn't defining me, it still can be frustrating when there are shifts, because it's like, I don't care which size I am, can I just stay in one, so I'm not like having
right.
to buy new jeans yes. and new bras and whatever constantly. So at least, and again, this could change tomorrow, this could change next month, whatever. It seems like for now I'm more consistent, and that's like, that's not even like about like me trying to like manage my weight or whatever. It's more so just wanting to be stable for the sake of like my wallet, because buying new clothes, and that's, I feel like a really big piece of recovery that's not often talked about, you know, for people who have these significant body shifts, you know, and if your body gets larger in recovery, and if it's continuing like these changes, it's not necessarily like I thought. It was like, oh, I'll have this one change, I'll have to buy one new set of clothes and it'll be fine. And it was like, nope, you're gonna have like several shifts, and it's a lot, and like so many things that I had to donate or give to friends, and like even like I feel like even over like the past year, things that have continued to shift. And so I think that was really difficult. And I think seeing such drastic shifts and having to trust that that was healthy too, because that was something for my whole life that I was told, like, especially if it was like a sudden shift in your body, that I was told that that was, you know, always a bad thing. And having to try kind of, you know, trust my doctors and my dietitian and my therapist and things like that was really, really difficult. I was like, how is this normal? How is this good? And everybody was like, you know, and also like, I want to preface this by saying that like health isn't an indicator of worth. It's not, you know, something that should be, you know, it's not a moral imperative. And at the same time, I feel like it's kind of hard to, I feel like, to talk about health in this community, because again, like someone like whether you're, and health is a continuum, and whether you're healthy or not, like doesn't define you or your recovery, but I am healthy like by like labs and things like that. And so for me, like having those drastic shifts and kind of trusting that it was healthy was very difficult for me to be like, okay, there's nothing wrong with my labs, my doctor's saying nothing's wrong, my dietitian is saying this is fine, and having to be like, what the fuck, like how is this like normal? And like my whole life that's what I was taught. And kind of like also at that point, before I even started recovery, I was in a pretty serious relationship that ended up being a really toxic relationship for about 2.5 years. And I when I ended that relationship, it was very strange for me to get back into dating, not only because I was in recovery, but because my body had changed so much. Because I, you know, kind of like, I guess my first round of really serious dating, A, I was still my eating disorder, and B, I was in a very socially acceptable body, that right. I was thin, and so I fit that ideal. And then once everything changed, like, it also wasn't like I was just like a little bit different. It wasn't that I was just like, you know, the like socially acceptable level of plus size and whatever. It was a very big shift. And also I think going into like the dating space, when you have these very countercultural beliefs as far as like being anti-diet culture and all of that, was a really strange thing for me. And it took a lot of trial and error. And luckily now I've been with my boyfriend Sean for almost 2 years, and we have, you know, very similar views as far as bodies and food and things like that, which is very helpful, because I also
That's have amazing.
Plenty of people along. Yeah, it's amazing. And like, I had plenty of people along the way that it was completely.
It is not very common, especially in men, for them to be like woke.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. And like, so that's been like very, very helpful. And like, he's like one of the most like normal, you know, eaters that I know, as far as like having like, you know, a very like varied, you know, diet, and like doesn't like, you know, eat a particular thing because he thinks it's going to change his body or whatever, that he just, you know, he's like a very natural intuitive eater himself, which has been
interesting.
Oh yeah, it's very interesting and very honestly very strange for me, right. Because I'm like, I've never
right.
like honestly like in my life it was just like, so that's been really helpful. And at the same time, there were so many people along the way that it was the complete opposite, or like people that I would like, because for me, especially because I, you know, have been like kind of like, I guess, like a public figure for a few years now, that like I knew that these people were going to find out that I had an eating disorder some way, like whether it was like once they found my social media or what. So I was pretty open very early on with people, because I'm like, you know what, I want to be the person who tells them these things. I don't want them to just like happen upon my Instagram and find out. And the amount of times that people are like, you don't look like you had an eating disorder or whatever. And it's like,
oh, super helpful.
Not helpful. It's like, oh, people. And it was just like, or like someone once was like, oh, I'm in a different boat, you know, I'm swinging the other way or whatever. And I'm just like, I don't have like, and like, when you're trying to like, it just takes so much mental capacity. And also just, I feel like so much restraint not to just like go off on people when you're like, and you're trying to like, you're yes. like, you're just trying to date and you're trying to find someone. I'm like, this is the shit that you're dealing with. So like for me, so grateful with Sean now that he's like such a normal eater and like very supportive of health at every size and intuitive eating and everything. And like, obviously, you know, it's taken time for him to understand those things too. Cause even like while he's been like a natural intuitive eater, like I feel like the health at every size piece especially wasn't, you know, stuff that he was taught either, just because, you know, growing up, that's like not a thing, but he's like always very interested in it and, you know, has tried to help like his family like learn some of that. And it's the same thing like with my family, where it's like some of it sticks, some of it doesn't, but at least the two of us, you know, at least I know that like he holds the same beliefs as far as that, which is very helpful, because
right,
very much a rarity. And I know so many other people don't have that. And for people who, like, if I know, if like, let's say like I didn't find Sean and I was still dating now, like that would, I'm pretty sure like he's kind of like a unicorn in that respect, that like,
yes, it's very hard to find. Yes, I just don't even want to date because I feel like it's so toxic. Oh, no. And
it's so bad, and like,
like I just don't want to deal with like being in a fat body trying to find someone.
Oh yeah, exactly. Or like even like if you're like going out to eat with someone or whatever, and like I feel like there's just like, or even like also like with like when I started dating Sean, that like, I mean, I was in recovery for a few years and I had been pretty solid for some amount of time, but I was also like, I was kind of in a more rocky place because I had experienced that I was sexually assaulted like the summer before that. And it was just like, there was still a lot kind of all over the place and I was in a more vulnerable place in my recovery. And so he kind of had to be like part of some of that, like not fun stuff. And really, I mean, relationships are hard regardless of like if you have experienced an eating disorder or not, but it's a very different thing for someone to have to like support you through that, especially when it was very early in our relationship, as far as times like where I didn't want to eat and he had to like, you know, have tough love of kind of like making me eat something or whatever it was, or, you know, not letting me like get away with different things. And like him, like, and I'm very grateful that he was, you know, constantly trying to find ways to like be helpful and being open to like being educated and being open to like me saying like when things weren't working or like, you know, when things were harmful and things like that. And luckily now I'm in a place where like everything as far as my eating disorder, like, you know, it, obviously it'll always color the way like my experiences as a person, but I in a sense consider it a thing of the past because it's just not something that's like in the forefront of my brain. Like I obviously, like anyone, have still bad body image days and days where I'm like, oh, I wish I could change this thing, or like it would be cool if I could, you know, be a different size or whatever. Like that's just a thing that like I feel like that's something that like obviously while it decreases over time, I feel like that piece of it never goes away completely.
Right. I don't think it can, living in the society that
exactly.
we live in.
That's just like with the society. Yeah, exactly. But that's just like, you know, a big thing. But at least with the food piece, that I am like in a very stable place in my relationship with food. I mean, I would say the hardest thing for me is I have celiac disease, so being gluten free, especially like in the time of this pandemic, is hard. And like I feel like that's like, I would say like, and that was also difficult in my recovery, but I think that's like the one thing I guess that makes my relationship with food tricky, especially like when there are things that like I'd really like to eat but can't because gluten. And like, you know, and I think,
have you always had celiac disease?
So the way it works, like, yes, I've always had it, but I didn't know until I was 18. And so, okay. You know, that's something that like, it's something that like you're born with, but like it kind of, I guess, also can like turn on in a sense, because it's an autoimmune disease, and like people don't necessarily like always show symptoms. And so for me, it was like, it's now also like, cause in the, like when I was younger, I didn't necessarily like, I had like weird symptoms, but didn't know where they were coming from. And also like now, like if I accidentally have gluten or something, I do get really sick. And so it's really tricky with that. And like, I feel like balancing that with recovery, because for me, it was really hard trying to find like gluten-free versions of different things. And also like, if I'm like trying to like be with friends and trying to be a flexible eater, of like kind of having to like still like make a lot of choices that I wish I could have more freedom around. And luckily like a lot of brands, you know, have good gluten-free stuff now. I'm like, I'm lucky to be in a financial position where I can afford to try different things, and it's okay. Like if I don't like it, I don't have, like I can throw it out or whatever. Whereas I know like many people who are in a, you know, aren't as privileged financially, don't have, you know, that luxury. And like, while I definitely like, I'm still for most intents and purposes a broke grad student, I'm definitely in a much better place than a lot of people financially, and gluten-free food is expensive, and like, you know, experimenting with things like that, and also the fact that I can keep in my house at most times, you know, the things that I am craving and the things that I want. So that piece of intuitive eating is easier for me than people, you know, who are dealing with food insecurity and like have a low budget and things like that. So I am very grateful and very privileged in that aspect. Even though I have, you know, that aspect of having celiac, which can make things harder, I'm luckily in a financial place where I can, for the most part, you know, make it work. And you know, I feel like that'll be the piece that's always kind of a constant thing. And I think that can make my relationship with my body tricky, because like, sometimes I'm like, I really wish my body didn't hate me and I could just like eat a piece of regular pizza and like, or eat a bread bowl from like Panera or something and it would be fine. And so it's difficult to like, I guess, like kind of like reconcile that piece of like being really grateful for my body and where it's at, and especially
Can you talk about like making peace with your body and like body acceptance for you, what that looks like, or body love, whatever, wherever you are on the spectrum with that?
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely, it's been a process, and you know, like so many things will constantly be a process. And I think for me, it really needed to start with like body neutrality, and where I was like, okay, don't love my body, don't really hate it, I'm kind of just like in this like weird limbo space. And that was, and also like honestly, for like a lot of early recovery, I did still hate my body, and I hated what I like, I hated that I had to like make these changes and I hated seeing the physical changes in my body, even though those physical changes weren't what defined my recovery. Because honestly, at all different points in my recovery and in my eating disorder, I've been at all different types of body sizes, and that size wasn't whatever defined my struggle or whatever defined like my darkest points. Because honestly, some of my darkest points were in relapses where my body size was like still like honestly like was like considered like above normal or whatever, you know. So like it wasn't like my darkest points, honestly. While I probably had some dark points where I was at my smallest, that wasn't when I had all of them. And the same thing in my path of body acceptance, that like now I am the largest I've ever been. I'm also the most at peace with my body that I've ever been. And so I think for me, a lot of it has been detaching my idea of worth and my idea of happiness with my body from that size piece, and trying to find appreciation for my body and having it not be a black and white thing. Like even on days where I'm like really frustrated with my body, like maybe for example, like if I got gluten and was having a lot of really bad GI issues because of it, and I can also be grateful for the fact that like I can walk, I can dance, and I like all of that. And so it's honestly also been surrounding myself with body diversity and things like that, you know, being curating my social media accounts where I unfollow people that, you know, are preaching things that are counter to what I need as far as body image, and also like challenging myself to view people of different body sizes and, you know, different races and different, you know, genders and different sexual orientations and just people of different identities than me. Because while growing up in New York, I had a lot of diversity around me. I feel like size diversity is always a thing that's like, also I think a lot of people don't think about when talking about diversity. And even like for me, like in my program in grad school, I'm in a diversity class right now, and that's not really something that's talked about. And I think that's like a big thing, like with most people, that like when we think about diversity, we don't think about size diversity. And so I think surrounding myself with that as far as like my online like world, and also like with my world with like people that I hang out with, like, you know, trying to have a varied group of people of friends and things like that. And I think having those role models of like people like that I found on Instagram who were further along in their recovery or further along in their body acceptance journey, and being like, okay, this person, you know, at one point felt like how I'm feeling, and now they feel like this, I can get there too. And, you know, I think accepting that it is going to be a constant up and down. And like, also for me now, like I said, I'm the most at peace with my body that I've ever been. And like, I don't have like urges to engage in eating disorder behaviors and things like that. And there are still days where I wake up and I'm like, I really hate my body today, or I really hate how my body looks.
Yes.
And being like, that's a thing and that's okay. And I can go on with my day and not have it dictate my whole day, which is something that a few years ago was not a thing at all. And so I think that, like, for people, I think it's easy for, you know, it to look like all sunshine and rainbows all the time, like in recovery. And that's like 100% not what it is. And like, there are a lot of bright moments, and so much of it is in the gray and in like this really difficult work. And so I think for myself, being really real about that, you know, for myself internally, and I think trying, like, for me, a lot of my healing came from like documenting my journey on Instagram and things like that. And I think trying to be real with people about like what real recovery looks like, and being real about how things like don't feel good a lot of the time. And I think it's easy for like toxic positivity to be a thing too, and being like, oh, you know, it has to be always feeling great in recovery, and it has to always be like feeling super body love, and I love this thing, and this is great. And I think that's important. Like, I think having that balance of like, okay, this thing can feel awesome, and I can feel like I love my body today, and I can also feel really bad about it. And that doesn't mean that I'm like doing something wrong, or that I'm like being bad at body acceptance or whatever. I think like being able to view it as like a continuum, and getting out of that black and white thinking of being, you know, I feel like it's just, again, like this constant journey, and being open to like my relationship with my body evolving, and also being open to like my ideas around health evolving and my views of beauty and things like that. I think being open to that evolution, because just like over the past few years and learning about health at every size and fat positivity and fat acceptance and like intuitive eating, all of that stuff, like it shifted my perspective. And I know that I'll continue to grow deeper in that as I continue, you know, to get more into research and things like that. So I think, you know, also continuing to challenge, you know, my own biases and things like that, and addressing my own privilege and things like that has been really important.
Right. So I wanted to ask you about, like, in what ways do you benefit from privilege and also suffer from discrimination based on your body? And like, what is that like for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely as someone who is white and cisgender and straight, that is a big level of privilege. And I think there's a lot that goes along with like white fragility and things like that, that it can be really infuriating. And like, also like for me, that like I was at one point in my life, you know, wouldn't have subscribed to the idea of white privilege. And after a lot of education and a lot of, you know, emotional labor from other people and reading and educating myself, you know, really realized, you know, how much privilege I hold in that piece. And it, like, I think for a lot of people, like they think that privilege means that nothing bad ever happens to you, or that you never struggle. And like, that's the opposite of what it means. It just means like that particular part of your life isn't going to cause discrimination or pain for you. Like me being right. a white person, I'm not going to have to face the same things that people of color are going to have to face. And so always knowing that, and I think holding that as a responsibility too, that I need to, like, you know, not that I need to educate every single white person in my life, but I need to have that where I can't, like, I need to be standing up for people and, you know, working through that emotional labor piece too, you know, that I think, you know, really speaking out about that is a big thing. As far as also being cisgender, that was something I feel like for me, especially because I'm no longer religious, I consider myself agnostic, but I grew up Catholic. And that's something that, like, with sexuality and with gender identity, that was something that I just like wasn't taught. And like, that took, I feel like, a lot of unlearning and like also constantly growing in that. I think I am very grateful that for undergrad, I went to a very, very liberal school, and I had some amazing sexuality classes and was able to get so much rich knowledge that I wouldn't have gotten in other parts of the country. And so for me, just always being open to learning, and also open to being like, oh, I've fucked up at this point in time, or, you know, I think being open to that evolution. And I think it can be really difficult to own up when we do screw things up, or like mm-hmm. if we do have blind spots and things like that. And also like if we have our own judgments and things like that. And so I think, you know, showing myself compassion and also holding myself accountable. So that balance there, that dialectic. And with the sexuality piece, you know, as someone who's straight, I'm never going to, you know, face the struggles that people of, you know, differing sexual orientations face. And as far as, you know, ways that I experience discrimination, I think for me, as far as my body, as a fat woman, I both have privilege and not in this capacity, because I am like a small to medium fat. And so I don't experience the same things, you know, while I do have some issues, like, especially with like at coffee shops that like certain seats won't fit. And I guess to some extent, like on planes, I can be a little bit uncomfortable, but honestly, like seatbelts fit me. I can, for the most part, fit in a seat. And also most of the time when it's kind of rare that I fly alone. So most of the time I'm flying with Sean, and like, it's fine. Like if my legs are touching his or whatever, whereas like if I was sitting with like another person, they probably wouldn't enjoy like me like taking up some of their seat or whatever. And so I have privilege in right. that piece. And just in general, like I do definitely get a lot of hate around my body, especially online, as far as people saying things about my health or about me promoting different things and whatever. I get that a lot more than I did when I was thin, or even like when I was I guess like I at points in my life where I wouldn't have considered myself fat, but I was still plus sized or on the like higher end of straight sized. And I still know that plenty of other people get even more hate than I do. And also as far as like in person, it's very rare that in person I'm going to get looks or someone saying something about my food or whatever. Like there are occasional things, but for the most part, a lot of that comes online. Whereas I know that there are a lot of people that just in their day-to-day life, they're subject to this, whether like they're getting their food at the grocery store or they're shopping for pants or whatever, that luckily for the most part, for me, that's not something that I experience as much in person. Like there definitely is that piece. And like I said, all of the trolls online and all that hate, which is pretty frequent. And at the same time, you know, I do have privilege in that piece. And also as far as being able to find clothing, that I am luckily in most stores, I'm able to find something that I'm able to fit into, which I know for many people, that's not a thing. Or with dancewear. And given like, for me, I'm someone that's okay with wearing things tighter or having to slightly modify things, but I'm luckily able to fit into a lot of dancewear. Again, not everything, but for compared to a lot of other people who wouldn't be able to find anything, I hold that privilege there. And that's something that I'm like very aware of and constantly also trying to work towards, you know, changing things as far as, you know, because I know that I have a platform and trying to use that platform for good, even though like for me, it's great that I can fit into things, and that doesn't like, it's not okay that there isn't that thing available for others. So I think constantly trying to use my privilege to expand things for others and to try to fight against the injustices. And so I think it can be really tricky to balance like that piece of like having the marginalization and also like I guess kind of like that like oppressor versus oppressed thing and like intersectionality. And I think it's like really important. And so it's definitely a tricky balance though, when you're kind of like, I guess kind of like in the middle of a category where like you experience like discrimination because of it and you also hold privilege. So I think for me, that's been something where I've also had to be like very open to hearing other people's experiences and realizing like even within like, you know, the size piece of like realizing like, you know, in the past, like different brands that I supported or whatever that I no longer support, or like, let's say like, I'll get something from a particular brand because I need clothing and that fits me. And at the same time, like not necessarily promoting that brand because of knowing like, okay, like, yes, I need clothing and this clothing works for me. And I also know that this isn't an inclusive brand. And I don't need to be giving that brand airtime just because that particular thing works for me and I like that. If it's not inclusive for people, I don't need to be putting that, you know, out there. And so,
Right. So I guess tell me a little bit about the work that you do online, and then how has that been like shaped by your experiences and like the trauma in your life and your body?
So I first started my Instagram account. It was like very much like, it was kind of, I guess, before I really started recovery, but I was like kind of like in the like process of starting, and it was very small, like a very small account. And I was also very surface level about anything I shared, you know. It was like little things like, oh, I'm starting therapy this week or whatever, but like wouldn't say anything about actually like what was going on. And like, at that point I probably had like maybe 100 people who followed me or something, and like who knows how many of those were bots or whatever, you know. It was like not like I didn't have like any level even now, like the amount of like ass accounts that I'm like, who even are you? You're not even like actually a person, but you know. But my account was very, very small, and also like it was never a private account. But especially early on in my Instagram account's journey, it was mainly people, if not all people, that I didn't know in my day-to-day life. And so like, you know, even though it wasn't private, there was that privacy piece of like, it was all people I didn't know. And then, and it was also like, it was very much just like documenting my early recovery and things like that. And then it was April of 2016. And at this point, I probably had like somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 followers, and I decided to make a post calling out the dance world for how it treats bodies. And that was also when I created the hashtag BOPO Ballerina. And at that point I was like a little under a year into my recovery journey. And while my body had shifted some, and I was definitely getting away from like that ideal dance body, still held a lot more privilege in my body than I do now. When I started, like when I made that post, I was like hoping it would be well received and was hoping that it would reach a lot of people. Never expected it to take the trajectory that it did. and then it was like a few days later that someone from Yahoo reached out to me and said, like, we saw your post and we want to do a story on it. And so I still was like, okay, like this is cool, but it's not going to end up being anything. And then it ended up being that they made a video that was attached to the article that had a bunch of pictures and quotes from me. And that ended up being shared on all of their social media platforms globally. And so it took off. Yeah. It was insane that it was like, it really took off. And then other media outlets started doing stories on it. And it was like, all of a sudden my journey was very public, because then it was also like,
and I was that you would have had that same impact if you were in the body that you're in now?
I don't think so. I think that it would have, and I think while I received hate then, which I like, honestly, for me is also it's still mind boggling. Like, and I think I would have received significantly more hate and significantly less positive response, especially compared to like things I see now, like if dance brands post pictures, I mean, now there's still always some asshole in the comments, whereas then, you know, I feel like the trolls were, while there were plenty of them there, there were few and far between, and people for the most part weren't questioning what I was doing. And also I think that like media outlets were more apt to do it, just because like I was still like, even though I was larger than like the typical dancer, I was still, you know, I was still straight sized in clothing and all of that. But it was like all of a sudden I went from having like 1 or 2,000 followers to having 10,000 followers, and it was this like in this huge shift. And it was also like I was still at a very vulnerable place in my recovery, and that was very very different for me, because like while my family knew I had an eating disorder, we never talked about it aside from like my parents paying for my therapy. Like it wasn't like a thing that we ever had conversations about, and like suddenly this was out there, everybody knew about it. And so I think coming to terms with that, and I think I never realized, you know, how strange that would be for me, because it was also in a way kind of like I had this like second life. You know, it was like Colleen online, and like it wasn't necessarily that I was different people, but it was just like those conversations weren't something that I had with my in-person friends or with like my family. And suddenly that was a thing that like, you know, was happening. And so I also then had a really big responsibility once I had this platform to do things responsibly. And like, there were definitely things I did really well and things that I didn't do as well, you know, in that journey. And I think it's been a lot of navigating that. And I think also like now realizing how much privilege I still had then. And like, I think that I wasn't as receptive to people telling me things like that then. And I think now, like, especially coming from like a more objective place, can be like, yeah, there was so much about this that was good. And there were things that I didn't do so well. But so that really, really made a big impact on my recovery. And it was something, you know, dealing with even the level of hate I had then built a lot of resilience, and also the amount of connections that I then made from people that I had seen like that. Like, that was the first time I connected with Nita. That was the first time I connected with Project Heal. That was the first time that any media outlet had done any story on me. And so that was, you know, amazing, those connections I never would have made. And honestly, like, especially now as someone who is training to become a therapist, those connections have been paramount in, you know, the work that I'm already doing in the field. And so very grateful. And at the same time, also know that that likely wouldn't have been the same response, or might not even reach the same amount of people if it was something that like I did in my current body. And so that, you know, is,
which just for the record is like really shitty that that people in like fat bodies just like are not recognized and not promoted and not like partnered with and like all of that. Like, it's just so much harder to do that if you're in a fat body or like a racially different body.
Oh yeah. And even if they are promoted, it ends up being that like there's so much flack for it that it ends up like not holding like that, I guess, like the same like level of like, you know, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but it's just like not viewed in the same way. Like, even if you do end up having like the privilege of having that kind of promotion, it's not received in the same way. Like, even like now, like pretty frequently, because I'm a brand ambassador for a dancewear store that's called Discount Dance Supply. And like, they're a website that has a bunch of different dance brands. They also have some of their own, I guess, like brands that they've created. But anyway, I became a brand ambassador for them a few months ago. And so fairly frequently, they post pictures of me on their social media pages. And while there are always like a handful of people who are really supportive, honestly, like there's a lot more people who are unsupportive. And I know that like if they would have posted pictures of me like from that time, it would have been everybody. Still, there would be all those, there would be all the positive people like there are now. There would maybe be one or two haters, but it would all be like, oh my God, like, she's a body positive role model and whatever. And like, yeah, that was a valid thing. And like, that was something that I should have been proud of at the time. And at the same time, what I was doing, while it was radical in some respects, wasn't nearly as radical as the things I'm doing now. And also not nearly as radical as things like that you're doing and things that other, you know, people who are more marginalized identities, like what they're doing. And I think, you know, while the work that I did then was important, also like wasn't nearly as radical as what some people viewed it as. And also like the same thing, like, you know, while also the work that I'm doing now is very important, I think I work really hard to make it more inclusive. I'm also still someone who's not nearly as marginalized as so many other people in the community. And my voice, you know, I have to be very conscious of how I'm doing things and of brands that I choose to partner with and things like that. And also trying hard that anytime I have an opportunity, you know, if they ask me, like, do you have anyone that you would like us to connect us with or things like that, you know, trying my best to also uplift other voices in the community, which, you know, can be really tricky. And I feel like there's, like, with Instagram, there's always so much to navigate. And I think, you know, it's definitely, like, very interesting. And, like, I'm very grateful that brands do continue to partner with me, but it's also really hard a lot of times when people are so shitty. And also like, and like, they're kind of like different levels of it. Like, they're all like, you know, like I had like a few weeks ago that someone said something that was like particularly bad, and like they were like saying that like I was a bad role model for kids or something, and I think something about that.
Oh, like, I think I remember seeing
even
that.
Yeah, and it was like it was even worse than someone just being like, "Oh, she's unhealthy" or whatever, because like they went like that far, and like they weren't open to like any level of like dialogue, and like they were like being like, "Oh, like you're lying about this and whatever. Like, there's no way like these things you're saying are true or whatever." And like that was really, really challenging. And I also know that it would be even worse for someone who's in an even larger body than me, or someone who's a person of color, or someone who is trans or something like that. So, you know, that's something that it's really difficult. And at the same time, you know, grateful that I am still able to get airtime and things like that. You know, the brands continue to post me. And I know it must also, like, it is really hard because I'm sure, you know, that kids are seeing that still too in the comments. And for yes. them, like, I'm sure it's really difficult to see, like, someone like me who is a role model for this and someone who might look like them or whatever. Or even if it's someone, like, even, like, let's say it's a kid who is, like, you know, in, I guess, a socially acceptable body. Like, for them, I think still, like, regardless of what body you're in, like, having that body diversity is a great thing. And, like, it might make someone, regardless of the body size they're in, be like, oh, that might not be a good thing then if all these other people are saying this. So it's really hard to like have that piece of like, yes, like I want my voice out there and I want my pictures out there and things like that. And there's also like that negative content that goes along with it, which is really tricky to balance. And also I feel like I'm luckily at a point in my recovery where I can, like, it's not like those things like never shake me. Like that definitely, especially that particular comment, really, really shook me. And it's in times like that where, like, I would say that's like the times where, like, I really like question like different things. And, you know, I feel like at the same time, I'm still like at this point where I am so steady in my recovery and so steady at like where I'm at with my body that I am able to, you know, be resilient. And sometimes I will try to engage with people like from a place of education or whatever. And I'm also able to like brush it off to an extent. It still like bothers me and it still hurts and it still like causes issues for me. And I'm luckily at a place where I can like weigh out the good and bad, and I'm like, I can continue to do this work even though it's exhausting. Whereas for some people, if like they literally only ever get hate, I can totally see why they wouldn't want to continue putting their content out there,
right?
Because it can definitely be really hard to balance that, especially like if you're never, or let's say you're getting a little bit of positive response, but pretty much the bulk of it is negative. And I think it also, like, there are different, like, levels of things, like I was saying before, like, different levels of things that people say. Like, there's a big difference between someone saying, like, they just don't like how you look, or if they're, like, people are literally told that they should kill themselves because of how, like,
yes.
their body looks, yes. or saying, like, oh, you're dying, or whatever. And, like, also, like, we're all dying. Like, that's just kind of how, like, life works. Like, it's like we're all gonna die at some point. And like,
so my question for you is like very quickly, like, do you have a few tips for coping when social media gets hard or you're getting attacked on social media?
Yeah. I think definitely taking breaks away from it, even if it's just like an hour or something. And I think for me, having people help me, like an objective, like a friend or like Sean or something, like having someone look at like what's going on and like kind of, I guess, determine for you if it's worth like saying something to that person or not, because sometimes it honestly isn't. Like, sometimes the best
right.
action is to just block that person, delete it, get on with your life. And sometimes they're like, I think determining for yourself if you're at a place where like where you can healthily engage with that person, and it's whatever your choice is, it's valid if you want to say something to them, it's valid if you don't want to say anything to them. And so I think that's a really big thing. I think, you know, trying to build as much of like a support system on social media as you can. Like, mm-hmm. I'm very grateful to have a lot of people who are in the haze space and in the fat positive space and things like that, that I know have my back. So I think having that and, you know, having just that objective piece, and honestly, like, therapy has been a big thing as I've continued to like navigate this whole social media space, that I can bring that up in therapy. You know, and mm-hmm. so I think just making sure, I think looking out for your health and looking out for like what your red flags are. If you're getting burnt out by social media, like, I think for me, it's especially hard because I also work in the social media space as far as managing other social media accounts. So sometimes there are days where I have to take a break from my social media, but I can't take a break from like my client's social media. So I think finding for yourself, you know, knowing that it's okay to take a break and knowing that it's okay to change how you're interacting with social media. Like sometimes I have weeks where I'm able to respond to a lot of people. So sometimes that might be okay for you, or sometimes you might have to set that boundary for yourself of being like, okay, I can go on today and I can't like comment on anything. I can't do this. So I think being able to set those boundaries for yourself and knowing that there's no right or wrong way to use your social media.
Definitely. Okay. So I guess for our next thing, I would just wanted to ask you in the last like week, days, month, I mean, time, as we were saying, time is not really a thing right now, but if you could give like a high moment in your life recently and like a low moment, what would they be?
Yeah. Let me think. I guess for a low moment, I've been having a really, really hard time with being motivated around ballet, just because I'm luckily, I have like a small studio space at my house where I have a small piece of dance flooring. I have a ballet bar, but it's been really hard to find motivation to continue dancing, especially because like I can't really safely jump in my space because we don't have a sprung floor and I can't really see myself, and like also knowing that there's like a lot of uncertainty around when I can get back in the studio. So dealing with that lack of motivation, that kind of ambivalence around that is really hard. And then as far as a high moment, let me think. Why is it always so much harder to think of good things?
That's what I was thinking. Bad things. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, it's hard.
It's hard. I know that there are definitely good things. Oh, here's one. So I guess as far as a high moment, so my grad school is all currently over video, and I managed to get a 100 on one of the papers that I just handed in last week. So I was very happy about that. So like, while, you know, I think obviously we shouldn't define our worth around grades or school or whatever, that is like, I really value doing well in school. And so for me, that's something that I was really proud about, especially considering like the circumstances that like, yes, getting that grade is good anytime. But for me, getting that despite these circumstances was really awesome.
Definitely. Okay. So to wrap this up, tell our listeners where they can find more information about you or get in touch with you.
Sure. So I guess the space where I'm most active online is Instagram, and my Instagram is at Colleen M. Werner. That's at Colleen Mwerner, and that's like where I'm kind of most active on the internet. But I also have a website, which is ColleenMWerner.com. And so both on my, like on my Instagram, I have a spot where you can email me. You can also DM me. I just honestly, like, it can take me a really long time sometimes to get back to you.
Relatable.
I'm sometimes quicker with email. Like, and also like, it's really bad. Like, I guess I shouldn't say it's bad, but sometimes like I'll be able to like respond to a message as soon as I get it. And then other times like I feel bad for people who are like stuck and like, they're like all the way down their requests and might not even get to it before like Instagram makes it disappear. But also, like I said, my website, so I have information there. But yeah, Instagram is probably like the best place to find me on the internet.
Awesome. And I'm going to cut this out. Also, you should mention your book probably.
Oh, yeah. So also I wrote a book last year that is called Brave Girl Healing, which is all about my journey, and also combines like practical mental health tips. Sadly, my publisher closed a few months ago, and I had the option to self-publish my like physical copy again. I decided not to do that, but the ebook is still available. And I also think that there are still some copies of the physical book available. Like I know through Barnes and Noble, they're still available. And I want to say probably through Amazon, there's still some, but the ebook is always like, will always be out there. And I think especially now with like shipping times and things being all over the place and all of that, I think sometimes ebooks can be easier with this current world, but
definitely,
yeah, I think for a lot of people, there are exercises in there and there's a lot of awesome resources that I think a lot of people can connect with.
Okay, great. We will put all of that in the show notes. And I just wanted to thank you, Colleen, for speaking with me today. It has been amazing just getting to know more about your life and how your life has impacted your work. So thank you for speaking with me today.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be a part of this and to get to have, you know, such an important conversation like this.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again to Colleen Warner for telling us her story and for being here today. And thank you to all of you for listening to the show. I hope it was an impactful part of your week. This week's episode was sponsored by all of my patrons at The Friend I Never Wanted. You can join my Patreon for as little as $1 a month and support the podcast too. Also, please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on your podcast app so you can be notified about our next episodes. If you want to tell us your thoughts about this episode and the podcast in general, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at bodytraumapod@gmail.com. And I would so greatly appreciate it if you would leave a review on iTunes. It really helps us to be seen by more people. As always, I'm Nia Patterson, and this is Body Trauma. See you next time!